Page 30. He worked at his chains till he succeeded in getting out of them. He passed them through the bars of the window with a request that they should be taken to his master, and he should be informed that he was covered with vermin. This audacity was punished with heavier chains and prohibition of our visits. My grandmother continued to send him fresh changes of clothes. The old ones were burned up. The last night we saw him in jail, his mother still begged him to send for his master and beg his pardon. Neither persuasion nor argument could turn him from his purpose. He calmly answered, "I am waiting his time." Those chains were mournful to hear. Another 3 months passed, and Benjamin left his prison walls. We that loved him waited to bid him a long and last farewell. A slave trader had bought him. You remember I told you what price he brought when 10 years of age. Now he was more than 20 years old, and sold for $300. The master had been blind to his own interest. Long confinement had made his face too pale, his form too thin. Moreover, the trader had heard something of his character, and it did not strike him as suitable for a slave. He said he would give any price if the handsome lad was a girl. We thank God that he was not. Could you have seen that mother clinging to her child when they fastened the irons upon his wrists? Could you have heard her heart-rending groans and seen her bloodshot eyes wander wildly from face to face, vainly pleading for mercy? Could you have witnessed that scene as I saw it, you would exclaim, "Slavery is damnable." Benjamin, her youngest, her pet, was forever gone. She could not realize it. She had had an interview with the trader for the purpose of ascertaining if Benjamin could be purchased. She was told it was impossible, as he had given bonds not to sell him till he was out of the state. He promised that he would not sell him till he reached New Orleans. With a strong arm and unvaried trust, my grandmother began her work of love. Benjamin must be free. If she succeeded, she knew they would still be separated, but the sacrifice was not too great. Page 31. Day and night she labored. The trader's price would treble that he gave, but she was not discouraged. She employed a lawyer to write to a gentleman whom she knew in New Orleans. She begged him to interest himself for Benjamin, and he willingly favored her request. When he saw Benjamin and stated his business, he thanked him, but said he preferred to wait a while before making the trader an offer. He knew he had tried to obtain a high price for him, and had invariably failed. This encouraged him to make another effort for freedom. So one morning, long before day, Benjamin was missing. He was riding over the blue billows, bound for Baltimore. For once his white face did him a kindly service. They had no suspicion that it belonged to a slave. Otherwise, the law would have been followed out to the letter, and the thing rendered back to slavery. The brightest skies are often overshadowed by the darkest clouds. Benjamin was taken sick and compelled to remain in Baltimore 3 weeks. His strength was slow in returning, and his desire to continue his journey seemed to retard his recovery. How could he get strength without air and exercise? He resolved to venture on a short walk. A by street was selected, where he thought himself secure of not being met by anyone that knew him. But a voice called out, "Hello, Ben, my boy, what are you doing here?" His first impulse was to run, but his legs trembled so that he could not stir. He turned to confront his antagonist, and behold, there stood his old master's next-door neighbor. He thought it was all over with him now, but it proved otherwise. That man was a miracle. He possessed a goodly number of slaves, and yet was not quite deaf to that mystic clock whose ticking is rarely heard in the slaveholder's breast. "Ben, you are sick," said he. "Why, you look like a ghost. I guess I gave you something of a start. Never mind, Ben. I am not going to touch you. You had a pretty tough time of it, and you may go on your way rejoicing for all of me. But I would advise you to get out of this place plaguey quick, for there are several gentlemen here from our town." Page 32. He described the nearest and safest route to New York, and added, "I shall be glad to tell your mother I have seen you. Goodbye, Ben." Benjamin turned away, filled with gratitude and surprise that the town he had hated contained such a gem worthy of a purer setting. This gentleman was a northerner by birth and had married a southern lady. On his return, he told my grandmother that he had seen her son and of the service he had rendered him. Benjamin reached New York safely and concluded to stop there until he had gained strength enough to proceed further. It happened that my grandmother's only remaining son had sailed for the same city on business for his mistress. Through God's providence, the brothers met. You may be sure it was a happy meeting. "Oh, Phil," exclaimed Benjamin, "I am here at last." Then he told him how near he came to dying, almost in sight of free land, and how he prayed that he might live to get one breath of free air. He said life was worth something now, and it would be hard to die. In the old jail, he had not valued it. Once he was tempted to destroy it. But something, he did not know what, had prevented him. Perhaps it was fear. He had heard those who professed to be religious declare there was no heaven for self-murderers, and as his life had been pretty hot here, he did not desire a continuation of the same in another world. "If I die now," he exclaimed, "thank God I shall die a free man." He begged my Uncle Philip not to return south, but stay and work with him till they earned enough to buy those at home. His brother told him it would kill their mother if he deserted her in her trouble. She had pledged her house, and with difficulty had raised money to buy him. Would he be bought? "No, never," he replied. "Do you suppose, Phil, when I have got so far out of their clutches, I will give them one red cent? No. And do you suppose I would turn mother out of her home in her old age, that I would let her pay all those hard-earned dollars for me and never to see me? For you know she will stay south as long as her other children are slaves. What a good mother. Tell her to buy you, Phil. You have been a comfort to her, and I have been a trouble. And Linda, poor Linda, what'll become of her?" Page 33. "Phil, you don't know what a life they lead her. She has told me something about it, and I wish old Flint was dead or a better man. When I was in jail, he asked her if she didn't want him to ask my master to forgive me and take me home again. She told him no, that I didn't want to go back. He got mad and said we were all alike. I never despise my own master half as much as I do that man. There is many a worse slaveholder than my master, but for all that I would not be his slave." While Benjamin was sick, he had parted with nearly all his clothes to pay necessary expenses, but he did not part with a little pin I fastened on his bosom when we parted. It was the most valuable thing I owned, and I thought none more worthy to wear it. He had it still. His brother furnished him with clothes and gave him what money he had. They parted with moistened eyes, and as Benjamin turned away, he said, "Phil, I part with all my kindred." And so it proved. We never heard from him again. Uncle Philip came home, and the first words he uttered when he entered the house were, "Mother, Ben is free. I have seen him in New York." She stood looking at him with a bewildered air. "Mother, don't you believe it?" he said, laying his hand softly upon her shoulder. She raised her hands and exclaimed, "God be praised. Let us thank him." She dropped on her knees and poured forth her heart in prayer. Then Philip must sit down and repeat to her every word Benjamin had said. He told her all, only he forbore to mention how sick and pale her darling looked. Why should he distress her when she could do him no good? The brave old woman still toiled on, hoping to rescue some of her other children. After a while, she succeeded in buying Philip. She paid $800 and came home with the precious document that secured his freedom. The happy mother and son sat together by the old hearthstone that night, telling how proud they were of each other and how they would prove to the world that they could take care of themselves as they had long taken care of others. We all concluded by saying, "He that is willing to be a slave, let him be a slave." Page 34 is blank. Page 35. Starting Chapter 5, The Trials of Girlhood. During the first years of my service in Dr. Flint's family, I was accustomed to share some indulgences with the children of my mistress. Though this seemed to me no more than right, I was grateful for it, and tried to merit the kindness by the faithful discharge of my duties. But I now entered on my 15th year, a sad epoch in the life of a slave girl. My master began to whisper foul words in my ear. Young as I was, I could not remain ignorant of their import. I tried to treat them with indifference or contempt. The master's age, my extreme youth, and the fear that his conduct would be reported to my grandmother made him bear this treatment for many months. He was a crafty man and resorted to many means to accomplish his purposes. Sometimes he had stormy, terrific ways that made his victims tremble. Sometimes he assumed a gentleness that he thought must surely subdue. Of the two, I preferred his stormy moods, although they left me trembling. He tried his utmost to corrupt the pure principles my grandmother had instilled. He peopled my young mind with unclean images, such as only a vile monster could think of. I turned from him with disgust and hatred, but he was my master. I was compelled to live under the same roof with him, where I saw a man 40 years my senior daily violating the most sacred commandments of nature. He told me I was his property, that I must be subject to his will in all things. My soul revolted against the mean tyranny. But where could I turn for protection? No matter whether the slave girl be as black as ebony or as fair as her mistress. In either case, there is no shadow of law to protect her from insult, from violence, or even from death. All these are inflicted by fiends who bear the shape of men. Page 36. The mistress who ought to protect the helpless victim has no other feelings toward her but those of jealousy and rage. The degradation, the wrongs, the vices that grow out of slavery are more than I can describe. They are greater than you would willingly believe. Surely, if you credited one half the truths that are told you concerning the helpless millions suffering in this cruel bondage, you at the North would not help to tighten the yoke. You surely would refuse to do for the master, on your own soil, the mean and cruel work which trained bloodhounds and the lowest class of whites do for him at the South. Everywhere the years bring to all enough of sin and sorrow, but in slavery the very dawn of life is darkened by these shadows. Even the little child who is accustomed to wait on her mistress and her children will learn before she is 12 years old why it is that her mistress hates such and such a one among the slaves. Perhaps the child's own mother is among those hated ones. She listens to violent outbreaks of jealous passion and cannot help understanding what is the cause. She will become prematurely knowing in evil things. Soon she will learn to tremble when she hears her master's footfall. She will be compelled to realize that she is no longer a child. If God has bestowed beauty upon her, it will prove her greatest curse. That which commands admiration in the white woman only hastens the degradation of the female slave. I know that some are too much brutalized by slavery to feel the humiliation of their position, but many slaves feel it most acutely and shrink from the memory of it. I cannot tell how much I suffered in the presence of those wrongs, or how much I am still pained by the retrospect. My master met me at every turn, reminding me that I belonged to him, and swearing by heaven and earth that he would compel me to submit to him. If I went out for a breath of fresh air after a day of unwearied toil, his footsteps dogged me. If I knelt by my mother's grave, his dark shadow fell on me, even there. The light heart which nature had given me became heavy with sad forebodings. The other slaves in my master's house noticed the change. Many of them pitied me, but none dared to ask the cause. Page 37. They had no need to inquire. They knew too well the guilty practices under that roof, and they were aware that to speak of them was an offense that never went unpunished. I longed for someone to confide in. I would have given the world to have laid my head on my grandmother's faithful bosom and told her all my troubles. But Dr. Flint swore he would kill me if I was not as silent as the grave. Then, although my grandmother was all in all to me, I feared her as well as I loved her. I had been accustomed to look up to her with a respect bordering upon awe. I was very young and felt shamefaced about telling her such impure things, especially as I knew her to be very strict on such subjects.